You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. Thanks for joining us here in Edmond, Oklahoma City, and around the world. This is Trumpet Radio Live, Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon with you here today. And it's Monday. We're getting back at it. And a pretty exciting weekend, I guess, in a lot of ways, especially for sports. The Olympics got going. And a lot of swimming in the first part of the Olympics, which I'm always fascinated by because I'm not a big-time swimming type person. And some of these races, they're in the pool for, you know, back and forth, I don't know how many times, 400 meters. I couldn't make it 40 meters. So I'm always impressed with the swimming.
Right. I think Michael Phelps won his 19th gold medal. That guy is just unbelievable.
He did, yep. He won his 19th gold medal in the relay on Sunday evening. And so he's, of course, not as young as he used to be, but he is still swimming very well. And one of the big questions that has come up is, what are all those marks on his body? He has those circular marks. They're not just on him. They're on several athletes. Well, they're from suction cups.
Wow.
It's a new thing that they're doing, athletes are doing. They think it gives them an advantage. They say they're looking for a competitive edge over their opponents, and so they try all kinds of things. And now they're trying suction cups. During the Olympics, USA swimmers have been seen with dark circular marks around their bodies, and Michael Phelps had them on him. That's what people really noticed. For the past couple of years, swimmers have started turning to the ancient method found in China and parts of the Middle East to aid their recovery. Cupping, as it's called, involves heated glass cups that are applied to parts of the body. The temperature of glass creates suction that supposedly helps treat pain and relieve muscle knots and swelling. So, I'm probably not going to try that.
It sounds like it would actually cause pain with the heat and also suction pulling your skin away from your body.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't try it.
I noticed it like I think most people did, and I just thought, well, that's strange. I saw it on one person, and I at first I thought it was maybe like a birthmark or a bruise. I mean, it was a perfect circle, so it's a little strange, but no, they're actually trying these new methods. So they're always trying something new to give them a little advantage, and I don't know if it helps or if it doesn't. Michael Phelps was fast before. He's fast now. He was fast before the suction cups, fast after it, so maybe it helps a little bit.
At least it's not a negative for him.
Yeah, it hasn't slowed him down any. And we were watching it, and somebody that was watching it said, "Look at all those tattoos." And I was like, those aren't tattoos. those are suction cup marks. But you can never tell in this day and age because the tattoos are quite prevalent. Yesterday, I got a text from one of our coworkers, and he said, "Hey, you watching the Packer game tonight?" I'm a big Packer fan, and I said, "What?" I had no idea they were playing. I guess I'm not that much of a fan. Well, they were supposed to play in the Hall of Fame game last night, where they induct the new players into the Hall of Fame, and then they play a game, and then they end up canceling the game because the field wasn't ready. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of that happening before?
Well, at least it's the preseason. That's probably the only reason that would happen. But I heard that a lot of people had their entire nights ruined because they were looking forward to watching a preseason game.
Yeah.
Which just shows you how popular football is in this country. You can't imagine any other sport, a preseason game ruining someone's night if it was canceled.
Right. It's kind of the, like, I guess sort of the official, hey, we're back into football now. Mm-hmm. And it is so popular, of course, here in the U.S. And, No, I didn't end up, I wasn't going to go watch it anyway, but I thought, well, if I had, that would have ruined my night, like you said. Mm-hmm. But you think about all the people that were even there with the tickets, and then it was supposed to be on ESPN. You know, what do you come on, you say, yeah, sorry about that. We'll just, you know, show a rerun of Happy Days. What do you do?
Yeah, what happened? I thought there might have been some big rains in the area, something like that, that would have maybe washed out the field. I didn't hear much about it, but it seems like they would have at least prepared in advance before yesterday.
Yeah, well, whatever the case was, the Pro Football Hall of Fame president, David Baker, said it was an easy, ethical decision to cancel the game because player safety was their primary concern. They felt like the players would be injured on the field, potentially. This write-up says this was an NFL preseason game to be played by two NFL teams, the Colts and the Packers. between players employed by the NFL to be televised via the NFL's contract with ESPN. And so, you know, for a fan, it's like, well, that was unfortunate, but there's a lot of money involved in these things. So somebody's going to be in trouble today.
Yeah.
Who's the guy in charge of the field? I wouldn't want to be him.
Yeah, you can definitely understand the people who showed up to watch the game in person being upset. But I heard a guy on the radio just going on a rant saying, if you're upset that you didn't get to watch D-level football on TV tonight, then you must not have anything good to do. Because that's the first game of the preseason where the best players only play maybe five or six snaps.
Right.
And then they're off the field. So if that's what you're looking forward to, you might want to reevaluate your priorities.
Well, thankfully for the NFL, the Olympics were on, so people had a thing to be interested in, I guess. But for, you know, for a lot of teams and fans of different teams, you don't want to see injuries.
Mm-mm.
So probably better they didn't do it. But it was just interesting, kind of looking at some of the headlines over the weekend. There was this game gets canceled. There were several different activities, sporting events, races, and so forth, where people died. You know, each individual thing by itself is kind of maybe not that big of a deal. It just seemed like there were three or four or five of these things. We're so into our leisure time activities in this country, and really, in a lot of cases, some people really do live for that entertainment. And it was weird to see things get canceled, tragedies. You know, a few things. There was a couple of car races where people got killed, different things. So,
right.
Sort of interesting when you see the leisure time activities being taken away to some extent.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that just kind of shows you that when you start putting too much stock in something like that, then all of a sudden it's taken away from you or something terrible could happen. So priorities are pretty important.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more about priorities later on in the program. We have an interesting article that we're going to talk about. And it's from the Guardian, and they're talking about, they're giving six examples of people and the time they spend on the internet and what has happened to their lives because of that. It's pretty interesting just to see, again, how people prioritize their lives and what some of the effects are of those choices that they make. If you feel like spending a lot of time sitting around an airport waiting for a flight that was canceled, then today's going to be a great day for you. If you don't like that and you're having to fly, it might be a bad day. CNN Money says Delta says flights resuming, but massive cancellations still expected. This was a big story here early Monday. Delta Airlines flights were grounded for at least 6 hours early Monday by a global computer system outage. And, you know, that really does highlight how tied in we are to those computer systems. If there's a problem with them, it can have massive problems, of course. There was large-scale cancellations, stranding hundreds of thousands of passengers. At 8:40 a.m. Eastern, Delta said the ground stop had been lifted, but that only limited departures had resumed. It's expected the flights will be delayed and canceled throughout the day. So hopefully you don't have to fly today. If you do, you can always listen to us on the on your TuneIn app on your cell phone. Give
you
something
go.
To do. I got to try to make it positive.
Yeah, and avoid Delta if you can. I flew with them just over a month ago. They're a really common airline, too.
Yeah. Lots of flights going with Delta, and so this is going to affect a lot of people. Every time that you're in an airport, especially these days, because it seems like flights get overbooked a fair bit, the security, the lines are longer, the tensions are high anyway.
Yeah.
At airports, and I imagine today is not going to be a fun day for the passengers or for the people at the ticket counters.
Probably even more so for the people at the ticket counters. They're dealing with the wrath of hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And they're saying, like, what do you think I have to do with this global computer meltdown? This is not part of my job description at all.
Exactly. And I've seen that where people go up to the counter and they think that one person behind the counter should solve all of their problems immediately. And because they can't, there's nothing they can do. They get the wrath. I have seen that happen, and it gets pretty uncomfortable pretty fast.
That one person is just the physical representation of the entire company and somehow has control over the computers and every other operation, even though all they're doing is taking tickets at a counter.
Right. I think there's always like a few funny sketches out there, comedy sketches I've seen over the years where there's a frustrated passenger trying to get some resolution, and they always spend like 5 minutes typing, and then they come back with the same answer, like, no, I can't help you, and then they type again. And you always wonder, what are they typing? What are they looking at? It must be a database or something, but it's a lot of typing to get the same answer. Of no, you can't fly.
And then after a while, they're like, let me think. No. Right. They're like, I've already checked several times. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, it would probably be one of the... It would be interesting to see what some of the highest stress level jobs are. I bet that working with the airlines is probably one of those.
Yeah, police, airline attendant of some sort.
There was a story last week where a pilot had to take down a passenger, an unruly passenger on the plane. They had, I think they had landed already, or if they hadn't, somebody was flying it.
Autopilot,
maybe.
Hopefully. I don't know.
Somebody was flying this thing. But he was, they showed it on the national news. The guy, people were filming it on their phones, of course, and this guy had too many drinks on the plane, and he was getting pretty pretty heated about something, and he refused to sit down. And so he began to get, you know, kind of aggressive with one of the flight attendants. And then this pilot comes bursting out of there, takes him down. And it's kind of a hero, you know. I think the rest of the passengers were pretty happy about that. But anytime something happens on a flight, it can get pretty nerve-wracking. You ever been on a flight and had something unusual happen?
Yes. Actually, it was a really long flight. I think it was either to or from Australia. And we had some extremely drunk people, I think, right in front of us. And they just kept on literally just touching the people in front of them. They just reach over and poke them.
Just to mess with them?
Yeah, and they wouldn't stop. And I think one of the person in front of them who they were touching was, he had his own issues as well. So it just was not a good mix. But even with that situation you're talking about, how many of those people filming the incident were strong men who could have dealt with it themselves? Instead, they just wanted to get a good video on their phones.
Yeah, you do see that a lot where... Sometimes people could help, but they film instead. You can actually get in trouble for that, depending. Yeah. That happened a while ago with a car accident, and instead of going to help the person, somebody just filmed.
It's unbelievable.
And that you can get in some difficulty. But again, you know, one of those situations, I guess you'd think, well, what am I, you know, would I get in trouble if I did something here?
That's
it's
true
hard
as
to
well.
Know.
Yeah, sometimes if you interfere, they could say that you were... actually inhibiting someone else from doing their job.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, there was even last week with that attack in London, the machete attack. One of the ladies that got hurt because she went up to the guy that was perpetrating the attack. She thought he was a victim.
Oh, no.
And then he turned on her. So, you know, you have sometimes things happen and it's chaotic and you're not sure what's going on. And then, you know, it's hard to know what to deal with. That's kind of the nature of certain situations. Kind of ties into this next story here. This is probably the big, I guess, story of the day. Terrorism. There's a blast in a Pakistan hospital that kills at least 70. And that's like, you know, again, it's a huge thing, but because it's over in Pakistan, it doesn't seem to have quite the same headline-making power. But this is kind of interesting, too. They say at least 70 people, many of them believed to be lawyers and journalists, were killed in a blast at a hospital in northwestern Pakistan. The explosion also injured at least 112 others, and nobody has claimed responsibility so far. But what happened is many of these lawyers and journalists had gathered at the hospital following the death of a prominent lawyer, Bilal Qassi, who had been killed in a shooting earlier in the day. So this guy gets killed. They all go to the hospital to see what's happened. They blow up the hospital. So I don't know if it was a setup in that way. But sometimes, you know, like we were talking about with that attack in London, people go to an area thinking they're either, like, say, reporting on it or they're there to help, and then another thing happens. And we've seen that, I guess, in several attacks this year where there's an attack, people go to help, and then something else happens.
Yeah, that definitely seems like a setup there. I mean, how could you think of it any other way, really? I mean, obviously, they have to figure out some more details, I'm sure, but that really does seem like a setup. And if you're a terrorist and you're thinking one step ahead, what will all these people do after the first attack, then you could really maximize damage the second attack.
Yeah, that's one of the more dangerous jobs, is being a first responder.
Yeah.
And going in and trying to help, and then you get hit with a second wave of something. So anyway, it's just another attack that's happened over there in Pakistan. But because it's Pakistan and it's a little further away than you know, the U.S. or London or some Europe, some of those places, it seems like it's I don't know if it's expected. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but you kind of almost, oh, it's over there. You know, these things happen.
It happens all the time. It's like those people can't even step outside without getting shot or blown up anymore.
Yeah.
And that 70 people, I mean, obviously that's far away, but that's still a lot of people. That's an effective attack.
Yeah. So more terrorism. That's the age we live in. I was watching some of the Olympic coverage over the weekend, and some of the commentators on NBC were addressing that a little bit, just saying like, well, you know, thankfully opening ceremony went off without a hitch. You know, it is a time of terrorism, and they were acknowledging that fact as well. Also, I saw just the headline that the guy that's in charge of security at the Olympics was robbed at knife point, which it's not humorous, but it's ironic, I guess.
Oh, man.
You know, you're like, really? The guy over security?
Probably he'd be one of the few without maybe too many weapons on his person.
Could be.
The people he's overseeing obviously would have some way of defense, but maybe he wasn't expecting to be personally attacked.
Yeah, really ironic, if nothing else. This is an interesting story here from USA Today. It says, only in New Jersey, bill would ban motorists from drinking coffee and driving. If you can believe that. If you have a bit of a commute, I think most people enjoy their coffee or beverage of their choice. Now, this doesn't specifically mention coffee, but people are gathering it would affect coffee. It says New Jersey already draws ire for not letting drivers pump their own gas, which I didn't know.
What's the problem with that anyway? I don't want to get out of my car to pump gas.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. It says, but the state might ban them from having a cup of coffee behind the wheel, too. A bill under consideration in the state legislature calls to prohibit, quote, any activity unrelated to the actual operation of a motor vehicle in a manner that interferes with the safe operation of the vehicle on a public road or highway. Mm. That's a mouthful. They say that could mean no coffee, no snacks, no shaving.
Stop putting on your makeup while you're driving.
Right.
Yeah. Well, actually, if you go into one of those bigger areas and you see kind of the traffic thicken, it's kind of easier to understand why they would have a bill like that, because you will literally see everyone driving a car doing something insane while they're driving, and it's just normal because everyone's doing it.
Yeah, sometimes when you see people, like you say, driving in these bigger areas where there's more traffic and they drive every day and they're used to it in a way, they start to, I think, get bored and try to maybe maximize their time. I have seen people reading books.
Oh, man.
I've seen the shaving and the makeup applying, people eating, of course. And then, of course, now a lot of the newer vehicles have TVs in them, so the kids in the back are watching the TV, which I guess wouldn't distract the driver necessarily. But it is amazing, especially when you get out on some of these drives where you do sit in traffic for a long, long time and you don't move that fast. It would be very tempting to start trying to do more things, I guess. And I suppose in New Jersey, they would have plenty of chances to be stuck in the car.
The roads are already going to be congested enough. If anyone gets in a car wreck by doing something stupid like that, it's going to stop everything for hours.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you even get vehicles in there to deal with it if the roads are that packed?
Doesn't it drive you crazy when you're trying to get somewhere and you've got a pretty major traffic jam and you just know that when you get up there, it's going to be no reason? Mm-hmm. Like, now, sometimes it's an accident, like you say, but sometimes it's as simple as three lanes go down to two lanes.
Yeah.
But somehow that just blows the mind and we all get jammed up.
Yeah.
And they spend a fair bit of money every year trying to research how do you prevent traffic jams. And they have some pretty bright people that just study it and try to figure it out. And so far, to my knowledge, they have not figured it out, because I've been in plenty.
A big part of it is people trying to merge over at the very last second. And so everyone else has to slow down and let those people in. And if you know the road well enough, or if there's a sign telling you, you should try to merge as fast as possible, instead of holding everyone up like that.
Yeah, I always feel like if everyone just slowed up a little bit and left a car length or two, you could just keep moving even if at a slower pace. But inevitably, if you leave a spot, somebody comes in and takes it, or they try to push their way in, and then there is that lane that's ending, but somebody's like, you know what, I'm going to zip all the way up there as fast as I can, and then I'll cut back in.
That is so annoying.
Yeah.
That just reveals what kind of a person you are if you're willing to irritate hundreds of people just to cut them in line.
Yeah.
Everyone starts honking at them too. I like doing that. I just like hold down on my horn. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, they just stick the front end of their car in there, and you know, you kind of have to let people in. So anyway, New Jersey's thinking about cracking down on how exactly you drive your vehicle there, which leads us to this CBS News. Which state has the worst drivers in the U.S.? They say when you get cut off, stuck behind a slowpoke in the passing lane, or see someone whizzing by at 90 miles per hour in a 45 mile per hour zone, it's tradition to check the license plate and say, no wonder, they're from such and such a state. They say now there's a study that gives credence to that claim, but it may not be the state you suspect. It could, in fact, be your state.
Oh, no.
There's a list of the 10 worst states' drivers and the reasons why. Before we get to that, though, it reminds me, driving a 90 and a 45, I remember in high school, we had three parking lots, and two of them were connected by a little gravel road. And you had to be really careful, of course. It's a school zone. You couldn't drive too fast. And I remember after lunch one day, people would always go out for lunch. They'd go drive to some restaurant. And I remember seeing one guy who was in my class, and he looked really dejected, like something happened. And I asked around, I said, what's going on with him? For some reason, he decided it would be a good idea to drive down that gravel road about 70 miles an hour. And there was an officer there. He got caught. He's going 70 in probably a 15 in a school zone. Thankfully, nobody got hurt, but wow, I can't imagine what that fine would have been.
Yeah, if you're going, what is that, 5 or 6 times faster than the speed limit?
Yeah.
That's probably close to $1,000.
Yeah, and in a school zone, so they're really going to nail you on those.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things when you're, you know, 17, you're like, hey, I'm going to do this. And then you think, why did I do that?
And all he cares about is that he got caught. He doesn't care that he could have killed someone. He just he just doesn't want his car taken away by his parents, probably.
Yeah, you can sometimes get pretty serious penalties where you can even lose a license over something like that.
Oh yeah,
so
definitely.
Anyway, I always remember that. I always think, wow. Start thinking about what that fine would have been. Here is a list of the worst states and the reasons why. No offense, we have listeners in all of these states online at kpcg.fm. We're not saying it's you. Hey, I didn't make the list.
It could be you, though.
But it could be. So, but if it is you and you're mad about it, blame CBS News.
Or just stop it.
Right. The worst state, they say, is Florida.
Oh, wow.
Floridians Google speeding tickets and traffic tickets more than any other state. They also have the second lowest number of insured drivers in the nation. Florida surprises me. I guess I tend to think of Florida as more of an older state because of retirees, which sometimes they, you know, can drive a little slower. So, but the fact that they're looking for speeding tickets and traffic tickets would indicate it's probably younger drivers.
Yeah, there are probably a lot of people from Florida who aren't even originally from there. So obviously a lot of retirees move there, but you know, Miami, Tampa Bay, those are attractive destinations for anybody.
Yeah, and they're kind of party cities, so I could see people partying. It seems like Justin Bieber got in trouble driving down there sometime. I have that memory. I don't know why.
You're probably right.
Like he rented like a Lamborghini or something. The second worst state is Mississippi. The state had the 5th highest number of deaths resulting from auto accidents and the 12th highest rate of DUI arrests per driver in the country. And like Florida, there are not very many people insured. So Mississippi's not a good one. I've never been to Mississippi, so have not. I can't verify whether they were good or bad. Number 3, it's us.
Oh boy,
Oklahoma.
I knew we'd be up there.
Oklahoma. When it comes to states with many uninsured drivers, Oklahoma has more than its fair share. Only 74% of its drivers are insured, which I actually know of a few people that have gotten in accidents with uninsured motorists.
Mm.
It also has one of the 15 worst scores in DUIs per 1,000 drivers. and the number of people killed per 1,000 drivers in auto accidents. So, yeah, I can verify that there are some mysterious driving methods that I've seen.
I would actually have thought that a big problem here would be stopping at a stop sign 10 seconds before someone else, but still making everyone else go ahead of you,
mm-hmm.
which is the most annoying thing ever. I know they're trying to be nice, but at the same time, there are rules. If you get there first, you should go first
right.
instead of causing a near wreck at the yeah. intersection.
Four-way stops are guesswork. And then the other one, that this has happened recently to me. Somebody, they came up to the stop sign just flying. And so you have no idea if they're going to stop.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting. And they stop, but they stop halfway out in the intersection and then, like, wave me on. And I'd just
so
like,
go
no,
still?
You go because you're already halfway out there. And the funny thing is when that happens, the other driver always looks at you like, what are you doing?
I know. That's so frustrating. It's not my fault.
I'm just trying to stay alive, man. Yeah, interesting. There's one road not too far from the studio here where it used to be a four-way stop, and they put in stoplights. And people still, I think, forget and think it's a four-way. I've seen it where they stop, and the light turns red, and they're the first one in line, and the other car goes because it turned green, and then they go. And I've seen it multiple times,
wow.
and I'm like, I think they forgot. I think they think they're sitting at a four-way,
right?
And they're not. So, but one thing they've done here recently that's a little different is on turn signals, they'll give you the yield, the yellow, flashing yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to just be green or red.
Mm-hmm.
But now, which I think is kind of good, but as long as people know what it means, like that's
exactly.
a yield. That means if no one's coming, you can go.
It doesn't yeah. mean speed up before it turns red,
right.
which is what some people think yellow means.
Right. Yeah. When I took driver's ed, and this was back in Wisconsin. We had so much time that we had to drive and then observe. You'd sit in the back and let somebody else drive. And there was this one person that was learning to drive, and they had this weird habit of driving way too slow and then accelerating into the stop. Like, you'd be going too slow, like an instructor would be like, okay, we can pick it up a little more. And then, oh, here we're coming up to a red light, and all of a sudden they just hit the gas. It just scared us so bad. I don't know if they didn't know which pedal did what, but...
That's strange.
Anyway, I survived it. Fourth worst state is the aforementioned New Jersey. The Garden State has the second most deaths per driver. Maybe that's why they're trying to change some of the rules.
Yeah, that's a sensible rule they're trying to make there.
Delaware is number 5, New Jersey's neighbor and rival for worst drivers in the Mid-Atlantic region. Delaware is the only state with more deaths per driver than New Jersey. And, of course, like anything... The higher volume of traffic, obviously, the higher chance for problems. Number 6 is Alabama. They have just bad scores all around. Sorry, Alabama. Number 7 is Vermont, worst driving states. It leads the nation in DUIs per driver with 50 per 1,000 drivers. Seems a little strange. I've not been to Vermont, but I wouldn't think of it as a big DUI state, but apparently it is.
Yeah, it should be a beautiful state, and I don't know what's making them so miserable they have to get drunk and drive.
Might be the cold winters. I don't know.
That could be it.
I think that's what happens in Wisconsin. Number 8 is Tennessee. The state is one of the least insured states in the country, 20% of drivers not having car insurance. Tennessee also has the 18th highest number of deaths per 1,000 drivers. Texas, number 9, our neighbor to the south here. It has the highest percentage of deaths from drunk driving at 40%. Texas is the only state that I have been driving in and seen somebody drive by me drinking beer.
Wow. That is blatant.
In a convertible.
Texas is really bad with never using the blinker when they change lanes.
Mm-hmm.
They just drift in front of you,
yeah.
and you just can't ever tell if they're swerving or if they mean to turn into that lane because they're never using the blinker.
Right.
It frustrates me a lot.
One of the things that one of the jokes we always have when we're driving with my family is, when people turn and then they signal, I'm like, yeah. I guess they wanted to tell us what they just did.
It's irrelevant at that point
yeah.
to try and
yeah.
do it.
it's to let us know what's about to happen, not what you just did.
Yeah.
And the last in this list, the 10th worst state is Nevada. Nevada is the 3rd worst state for traffic and speeding tickets, as well as being the 17th worst for DUIs. I guess if you throw Vegas in there, that's probably where you get a lot of that.
Exactly. That's not too surprising.
Yeah. So anyway, that's if you didn't make the list, well, keep working at it. No, you don't want to be on this list. It's
well done.
Yeah. You don't want to be on that list of the 10th worst states for driving. So they say, according to this report from CBS News. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program coming up here in a bit on KPCG, a couple of segments today. And also, you can always find the videos to those online at kpcg.fm, a brand new one coming up this Friday. And those are always on here at kpcg.fm at 6 a.m., and then you can catch some replays throughout the day. And you can find those archives online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. That's coming up here in just a bit. He talked a little bit more about the Philadelphia Youth Camp going on there at Edstone. And they are focusing on being a cultured individual. That's what the young people are learning about. And one thing that stands out, as he talked about, Stephen Fleury talks about with Shakespeare, in the late 1500s when he was born, was that the population in the UK was very low. It was around 3 million people compared to, I think, about 70 million today. And he points out that the death rate was higher than the birth rate at the time. So they were actually losing people. It was a difficult time. There was a lot of sickness and disease. And just to survive your first year of life was a pretty big deal. Shakespeare didn't live a real long time. He was in his 50s, but compared to others around him, he lived quite a long time. He was talking about how even in the town he grew up in, some of the families had most of their children die just because of the time period they were in. And so he said it was just a different time. Education was different. Life was different. They would go to school 6 days a week if they went to school. And then the seventh day of the week, or one of the days of the week, I should say, they would have religious education. So they were pretty much active 7 days a week. And it wasn't the leisurely education. They were sitting on the old wooden benches, and I guess they only got about two breaks a day. And they were really getting a good education. But because of that, and just because of the life that they had to live, people were tougher physically and mentally, and they really had a lot of them had a real desire to learn because knowledge wasn't quite as accessible as it is today.
And they probably had more urgency because of the shorter life expectancy. Yeah, 6 days a week, seven if you count the religious education, constantly using their minds, constantly being challenged, not just taking full days for watching the Olympics.
Right. You couldn't Google things. You had to get a book somewhere or ask somebody who knew. So it was a different life. It was a harder life, but at the same time, because of some of those challenges, it made them, those that really dedicated themselves to learning, it made them really quite exceptional. And Shakespeare was one of those people. And then Stephen Fleury also tied in a little bit about this current election, and he mentioned that quote that I think is sort of infamous from President Obama, where he said that no candidate has ever been more qualified for office than Hillary Clinton.
Fantastic.
And, which I think a lot of people would have a dispute with that comment. But, you know, there were people that really did work like a Shakespeare to be qualified to do what he did. And it took a lot of really hard work. And so compared and contrast those two situations.
Oh, I wonder what would happen if you talked to Hillary supporters about that quote from Mr. Obama, if maybe they would agree with that, or if they would be honest and say that there have been more qualified people.
Yeah, it's funny. It seems like we do live in an age of extremes and kind of exclamatory statements or thoughts. You see that in the sporting world. Somebody does well and they say greatest of all time, and it's like, well, what's wrong with being pretty good? But in the case of the political cycle this year in the election, I don't think anybody is the most qualified to be president of anyone that tried out.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really either way. If you said that about either candidate, you could not possibly be telling the truth, and you would know it. That's a blatant lie. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it sounds good. It makes headlines, but not accurate. So anyway, really interesting program today on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Make sure you listen for that. And if you can't catch it live or one of the replays, you can always get the archive at kpcg.fm. We're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, take a look at a story from Fox News. About the election. We'll have that right after this on Trumpet Radio Live.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. KPCG is supported by the Philadelphia Church of God. The PCG produces thetrumpet.com, a news website analyzing current events and Bible prophecy. Thetrumpet.com includes daily updates, analysis, and a unique perspective based on the Bible. More information is available online at thetrumpet.com.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here, 101.3 KPCG. Thanks for joining us online. Our live stream at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. And if you'd like to send us an email, please do that. You can send those to comments at kpcg.fm. We're happy to look at those and appreciate those coming in. Grant, interesting story here from Fox News. This is from Rudy Giuliani. He says, Clinton refusal to seek police endorsement shows Dems as anti-law enforcement party. And, of course, Giuliani was pretty popular, I guess, well-known for his work with the police department in New York. He really did clean up that area. But they've reversed some of his policies. They don't agree with some of his policing methods. And so now he's coming out and saying because Clinton's not trying to seek this endorsement from the police, it shows that that party is the anti-law enforcement policy.
Giuliani is really quite a solid authority on this subject as well, because whenever he introduced more proactive policing policies in the 1990s, the crime went down. I mean, the results spoke for themselves. And a big issue with the Obama administration is they are directly trying to undo a lot of those policies, such as the stop and search and things like that we talked about the other day. And now Hillary Clinton has decided not to seek the endorsement of the Fraternal Order of Police. That drew, obviously, Rudolph Giuliani's criticism.
Is she... Now, does it say why she's doing this? Is it because that would kind of get in the way of the Black Lives Matter movement? She feels like it would undercut some of her base, or she just hasn't commented on why?
She has obviously had some of her spokesmen talk about it and just say that she does support the police and that the police have been involved throughout their campaign. Some generic statements like that. But you would think that you would want the endorsement of a body that represents 335,000 members of the police departments across the U.S., and she hasn't sought that at all.
It seems like it's sort of a balancing act that she has to do, because a lot of her base is, quite frankly, anti-police, at least anti-police in the sense of the way it's constructed now.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see changes, and so if she comes out and really supports them, I could see where part of her base would be upset. And that's just kind of the ridiculousness of politics, is it's not really about what a leader actually supports or actually wants to do. In most cases, it's about how do I kind of appease enough people to be voted in.
Mm-hmm. And she has voiced her support for Black Lives Matter, a group that recently argued that prostitution and drugs should be okay, essentially, because everyone who has been put in prison for those things should have their charges dropped and then they should be released. So what does that mean? Obviously, that means that those actual crimes shouldn't be crimes anymore. This is the type of group that she supports, and yet she doesn't say anything about the police. During the Democratic convention, she invited mothers whose sons were killed by police officers to speak, and whether or not those boys were killed wrongfully, what kind of message is that sending? It is an anti-police message. It's saying black men are on one side, the police are on the other side.
Yeah, it's very divisive, and interesting to see that she's going this way. I haven't actually seen her say too much about anything. She's kind of been laying low. Mm-hmm. Although I will give credit to the Washington Post today, because we were talking about how they've just been so anti-Trump. And now, today they did have a few articles that were actually taking a look at some of Hillary Clinton's situations as well. So they were probably listening to us, and they decided to turn it around.
They realized they've been caught.
They've been caught. And again, it's not that we have a preference there, but it's just you know, when it's really one-sided, that kind of stands out. And
right.
So who knows? Maybe they're going to try to balance it out a little bit. I doubt it, but you know, again, there's been enough in the news recently with Hillary Clinton and the FBI investigation and the emails, and then Iran yesterday where they had that nuclear scientist killed, and they think it's because of her leaked emails potentially. There's enough where they've got to kind of address some of that. And I know obviously Rudy Giuliani's really they've gone after him a fair bit as well, and some of his thoughts, especially when it comes to policing. There was a big uproar a while ago, you remember, when there was some of the I can't remember which situation it was. We've had so much police brutality lately in terms of the media saying they're having brutal methods, and then the response to that back mm-hmm. and forth. And he was on MSNBC, and he was kind of laying out some of the facts about the police and saying, look, they're actually doing a pretty good job, and really you need to look at the other side and what they're doing. And he got a lot of flack for that. There's a interesting write-up here from the Guardian as well that we wanted to touch on, and it has to do with people on the internet. Everybody likes to use the internet a little bit. Sometimes you have to, even if you don't like to, because it's very prevalent. The title of this article is, I Fall Asleep on My Computer, Six People on Their Relationship with the Web. Isn't that funny? We have relationships with the web now?
Well, we've been talking about before how people actually prefer their screens to actual people.
Yeah.
And you might consider the computer your best friend after a while.
That is true. There is six people here that they talk about that we'll just touch on briefly. The first one, the person's name is Carrie, 61 years old, and they say, my friendships have fallen apart, and I am gaining weight by being in all the time on the internet. Time spent online, 10 to 12 hours a day. That's a lot of time. They say the internet affects my ability to sleep, too. My day is turned upside down. I go to bed very late because I often get carried away reading something. Time flies when I am doing that. I imposed a regime. I don't know if that's the right word, but that's what they said. They imposed a regime on themselves to do things at home, but I drag my feet when it comes to going out. Whatever I need is now on the web. I can do online banking. I can shop online, find recipes there too. Information is much easier to get, but I do miss the personal contact with people. And so this is somebody that's 61 years old, so a little bit on the older side, probably not up to date with every latest development as some younger people are, but still really affecting their lives because they're spending so much time online.
If she misses personal contact, she should just go outside. At least in this case, she acknowledges that she misses it. Some people are totally content without any relationships in their lives. Just go outside, reconnect with some of those people.
They have to, again, like she said, you know, you have to set some boundaries, and there is a time, I guess, to turn it off. It becomes very addictive. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. 10 to 12 hours a day, 24 hours in a day, and like she said, she's not sleeping a lot, so a majority of the time seems to be spent online. I wonder, it doesn't give much indication as to her, whether she's working or what. Being that age, maybe she's retired or something, but that is a fair a bit of time. This is a younger person here, Jenny, 27. She says, I use the internet at work and go straight online when I get home. She spends about 10 hours a day online. A lot of times people's work requires them to be online, and so that's a big bulk of their time as well. But like this lady says, then she goes straight home and jumps right back on.
It never gets old, I guess. Yeah. And she's probably using it for completely different purposes, more entertainment-based purposes instead of her job. So it seems justified that way.
There's a commercial I saw yesterday. It was during the Olympics, you know, they like to bring out some of their newer commercials, I guess, because a lot of people are watching. And it was for, some sort of streaming service or something. And it was a real upbeat song about how great things are and whatever. And it kept showing all these new ways you can be on the screen. You can watch this show, you can do this and do that. And the whole idea behind it was that, hey man, life is just getting better and better and better because you can just watch more and more stuff online. And I was just like, well, yeah, that's kind of neat, but it's kind of a false narrative there, do people's lives really get better if they're watching? Is that the thing we need? Like, you know, I'm not happy enough. If only I could watch more online, then it would solve my problems.
No, I don't think that's what anyone needs. And a lot of those commercials emphasize the ability to binge watch more easily. That's what they call it now, binge watching, when you watch, what is it, 10 or 12 or 20 shows in a row without a break, as if that's the best thing for you. So, I mean, that might be convenient and you might be obsessed with a show, but it gets to a point where you just have to be in a place without a computer, get out of the house, leave your phone behind too, because your phone has that capability, and free yourself from that.
They do even have those detox clinics where people are having technology detoxes.
Yeah.
And they go there and they're cut off. It's really like being detoxed from a drug.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're not highlighting this because we're saying the internet's a bad thing necessarily, but it's just, it can be used so much and to an extreme that it really becomes, it takes over somebody's life.
The internet does have drug-like effects on the mind, especially when you're looking for immediate gratification. It sends stimuli to your brain, and then you're just hooked on it.
Yeah. And they have, and research has shown that it is actually, that people have withdrawals.
Exactly.
This next person, Mel, 24, from London. The internet has made my anxiety worse. Time spent online actually is not that much in comparison, 1 to 5 hours a day, even though that's a fair bit, but compared to others. They say, although I feel I'm right where I'm supposed to be in life, they're talking about seeing their friends on Facebook. They say, seeing their carefully curated lives as they appear on social media exacerbates my anxiety. The web is also very addictive. I've now deleted social media apps and use the sites on my browser for a fraction of the time I used to, but I often feel rubbish after using them. You can tell they're from the UK.
Yeah.
The person says, I've battled with mental health issues for a long time, even though at times of deep depression, I actually found sites like Reddit strangely helpful because they felt like they could talk to other people that were like them.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, they say, I think the internet has definitely made my anxiety worse. And there are a few people in this report that comment on Facebook in particular and how they just get sick of seeing everybody's perfect life on Facebook.
What those people don't realize is how much time people spend to make their lives look perfect on Facebook. They don't put any of the bad moments on there. That would make sense not to. You want to show that your life is awesome on a social networking platform. So that's not realistic. That's not how they live all the time. It's just what they want to project.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because everyone is kind of turned into a like a brand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone's branding themselves. They're selling themselves as, here's my brand, here's my exciting life, here's my media presence. And, you know, there was an article the other day. I didn't read it. I just read the headline. But they said there's a company that has a profile of everybody in the U.S. based upon their web traffic, which would be easy to do. I mean, you know how that works. If you go and let's say you go to a sporting goods store website and you look for something, next time you open up your browser, you got all these advertisements from the sporting goods store. Because they know you went
there.
It
knows me. I always have ads to like buying tickets to the next baseball game. It's like it knows exactly what I would like to do next.
That's right. They know us. They know what we're doing. And so sometimes that probably doesn't matter. Sometimes it might matter. It kind of depends on what you're doing. But it is interesting. Even this person pointed out that they have anxiety and they feel like it makes it worse. We do live in an age where it seems like mental health issues are a bigger and bigger concern. So. Yeah, like they said, after spending a long time on this, they feel like rubbish. Typically, if you go out and you talk to people, you feel pretty good afterwards. I mean, you might have a time or two where it didn't go great, but for the most part, it just changes your thinking. You kind of get out of your own little world and, you know, experience life a little bit.
Yeah, the internet a lot of the time is used as a means of escape, and I think that's a big reason why it can cause anxiety, because it's pretty much the least fulfilling thing you could do with your free time. Yet it's something that we use to forget about our responsibilities. In the back of our minds, the responsibilities are still there. The things we still need to do are still in our minds. At least if we're with people, it's a more entertaining, fulfilling way of spending our time, and we don't feel as nasty as when we use the internet for free time like that.
Yeah. You know what we should do? We should set up like a, we should make these two worlds merge where we set up like one of those old timey internet cafes that nobody uses anymore and say like, we can both get online, but do it together.
At
like
least,
a team.
At least do that.
Talk to each other about what you want to look at online. This next person is Mike. He's 67, so he's older too. The internet lets us keep in touch with family and friends, so he likes it. He spends about 2 to 5 hours a day on there. And there are some people that say, hey, I love it, it's great, and they're using it for certain things. And again, there are a lot of benefits to it, but it does have this way of just pulling people in. And it's like going from having two TV channels to 1,000. Mm-hmm. You can't stay on one thing because you feel like something else out there, though. You got to keep going through the channels. JP, just want to give the initial, 65. Says, I am online during my first cup of coffee, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Spends 8 to 10 hours a day online. They say, I doubt that it has benefited my life, as all the hours spent online could have been better spent outdoors. The web does, however, satisfy lots of my curiosities, and I can read an endless number of articles from around the world. So there, again, you can get a lot of good information. But did it benefit their life? They don't think so.
I think there's even a horror movie out now about people being so addicted to their screens it takes over.
Oh, wow.
Like that is literally a fear, I guess, of some people, like that they're being turned into robots by staring at their their phones all the time, and pretty much is happening, because if you go out to a restaurant, we've talked about it before, people are always just staring at their phones, and what is the point of it? Especially when you're doing it at every meal, that has especially bad health side effects to it.
Yeah.
And even spending hours at a time, of course, has bad effects.
I was out yesterday running some errands and was at a store, and there was a family there. There was the dad and the mom. I think they were about three kids, teenage age and younger, and they all had a smartphone, and they were all on it.
Wow.
And you see that everywhere, and you know, again, it's hard to not be constantly looking at it, but you have sort of these packs of people that roam around, but they're all individual. They're all by themselves with their phones, and so we see that everywhere. That's just common today. This other individual here, this is the last one they mentioned. Name is Matthew. He's 30 years old. He said, I deleted my Facebook a few years ago, and life has been better since. He still spends 12 hours a day online. Part of it is he works in IT, so he is spending a bulk of his day online and needs to know it well to do his job. But he says, due to my thirst for knowledge, the internet sometimes does affect my sleep. I have been known to be on my phone until the early hours reading Wikipedia or watching YouTube videos. His thirst for knowledge and YouTube videos. Something doesn't go hand in hand.
Wait, he's been known to do that, so people are aware of it.
I guess.
That's when you want to hide your habits, because you don't want to develop a reputation of being up all night online.
Yeah, that's true. He says it could be worse, I guess. Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, everything could be worse.
He says, and then this is his sarcastic shot at everybody else. He says, I could be on Facebook trying to promote my perfect existence like the rest of them.
Good point. That's so funny, too, because I'm always irritated by athletes who care more about how many shoes they sell than about actually winning championships. And yet, doesn't everyone try to promote their brand, try to make themselves look so awesome to other people?
Yeah.
It's just everyone is narcissistic to a certain point, I guess.
Yeah. And it's just interesting to me, because I think it's very rare that a person's Facebook page is going to bring a lot of joy to other people. There are instances, I think, where, you know, it's more of a family thing, like they can keep up with each other, and there are some good benefits to it. But when people are like, hey, look at this new thing. Hey, look what I did. Hey, look at this. I mean, just take,
oh, look at you.
You just take the internet out of the equation and think, did anybody ever like that person that came into class or came into work and like, well, just told you about their great, you know, I guess we should all be happy for each other, but human nature is like, I don't want to hear it.
That's so true.
So anyway, there's some jealousy out there about Facebook, and these people, I think, highlight probably the big trend. Again, there were a couple of these six that said, yeah, the internet they thought was pretty good, but in a lot of cases, they felt it was really harming their lives. However, they're not going to stop using it. And in a way, you can't. If you're going to survive, you can go off the grid, I guess. And but it's very difficult to not use it for certain things. It really, I think, is a matter of setting some boundaries and trying to stick to them.
Yeah, you have to write down the exact times you'll use it, or else it's easy to go way over time.
That's not a bad idea. There, some people do that, are very, very good about writing down the time they spend on activities throughout the day, and it is pretty revealing because time can fly pretty quickly, you know, on the internet or watching television or some of those other things where you don't have to be as engaged as, say, reading or talking to another human being or something like that.
Well, yeah, last week, one day I did try to actually write down how many minutes I spent on each activity. The whole day I only spent about 7 minutes on entertainment-based internet in, you know, pursuits. So 7 minutes online just for fun, when usually it would be way more than that, because basically I was like, I refuse to write more minutes down on this sheet of paper whenever other areas have not been done yet.
They should have interviewed you for this. It would have said Grant, and then it would have said 5 to 7 minutes per day. People are like, what?
I would have dominated.
Yeah. I feel like it hasn't impacted my life too much. Well, you know what would be really interesting is if we could have an honest self-evaluation about internet time and how much was essential versus how much was just entertainment-based. Even if it's like beneficial in a way, it's still kind of just like, eh, I want to see what's out there. I would guess, just thinking about myself, boy, it's a very small fraction that's actually like essential.
Right. Because even if you're looking up something about nature or science, something that technically does educate you, was it a necessity? Not really, in most cases.
Yeah, it's like when the power goes out when you're a kid or an adult, and you're used to having all the devices on. Everyone just looks at each other like, "Well, what now? What do we do?"
Have you seen the commercial about that where the internet's out for a few minutes and then it's out for a few hours and everyone's losing their minds?
Right. Yeah. I got to get on the internet. What am I going to do? It's funny. And it used to not exist, believe it. I'm that generation that remembers, well, there's a lot of people that do, but the generation that was like in high school going into college when the internet kind of became a thing. You know, everyone was using it. We had it at work, my first job, and it was like the one computer that had it, and you had to go over there and, oh, I need to get on the internet, you know.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Times have changed. Those are some of the interesting things going on today. And again, we're not down on the internet because we like you to listen to us online at kpcg.fm. But some people use it maybe too much. Interesting to think about. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up here in a bit. Also, a new Just the Best Literature and Music for Life today as well here on KPCG. That'll do it for us, myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon. Thanks for joining us here on this Monday. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.